name is Lear. I'm one of the YA librarians here. Thank you all for joining us today. Some housekeeping before we start. Restrooms are actually right out the exit downstairs. Please silence cell phones, myself included. You may be photographed and or videotaped today, so if you don't want to be, let us know. Probably mostly afterwards around the tables. Also, we are recording for podcasts, so any questions you ask, your voice will be recorded, and it's going to be awesome. Thank you all. Okay, thank you for joining us today. Today we have, I almost fell down on the floor. I'm going to borrow the mic. All right. Happy Saturday. We have Kathy from the Glass Studio. We have Heather and Aram from Adam's Forge, and we will be joined by people from Offerman Woodshop. But we'll just get started. I have a variety of questions, but we intersperse them with audience questions. So just for to kick us all off, if you want to talk about how you got to where you are today, and if there's anything kids in high school or college can start thinking about classes or work they should be doing.
Hi, I'm Heather. I went to college at UC San Diego, and my major was undeclared for my first 2 years. And I ended up being a theater major, and my first professional theater job, I worked at a theater where they did a lot of steel fabrication, which is a little bit unusual for theaters. So I learned how to, and by steel fabrication, that's like cut and weld. Just, you know, they'd bring in 20-foot long sticks of thin wall tubing or whatever from the steel supplier, and we'd chop it up and put it back together to make flats or furniture or whatever. But it was, so that's how I started doing steel. And I worked in theater for, making all kinds of weird things, using materials in odd ways. But what I really liked was the metalwork. So once my husband was doing well enough, I quit my job. And what I wanted to do was do steel fabrication, like furniture, build that kind of stuff. But I wasn't sure what to build, so I borrowed some books from a friend who was a designer on metalworking, and all of the stuff that I thought was the coolest in those books, every single piece that I loved was forged. And so I decided I needed to learn how to forge. So I've worked backwards technologically. So to me, forging is getting metal to hot enough that it becomes plastic. It's not melted, but it's really close to it. So if it's steel, which is the most common thing, it's 2,000 degrees to 2,300 degrees, somewhere in that temperature range. And so it's getting the steel hot enough that it gets squishy. It's almost like working with clay. You just can't touch it with your hands. And so what blacksmithing is to me is learning how to use tools instead of your hands to squish it around in ways that you think look cool. So that's how I started.
Hi. My name's Kathy, and I'm from the Glass Studio, and I work with glass. So I started via jewelry. I was always interested in jewelry from the time that I was a little kid. And I made jewelry the first time when I was about 5, collected beads when I was 9, hung out at a bead store called Macromania, and just, you know, absorbed and learned different things. And then I became a teenager and didn't care about any of that. And then something happened, and I rekindled my love of jewelry and started to, you know, go haunt the jewelry stores. And I overheard, and I was reading a lot of magazines, and I kept seeing stuff about, you know, fabricating your own glass beads and jewelry, and I became very intrigued. Also, while I was doing this, I was working as a graphic designer. And so I've always been creative and needed a creative outlet or a creative occupation. And being a graphic designer has come in handy quite a bit as I've moved over into a glass career because I can do all my own graphics. So I overheard at the bead store one day that they were getting an instructor in to teach them how to teach bead making. And I was like, I got it, I got it. So I signed up for the class. And that was like a really long time ago. Today's my birthday, so I'm like going, oh, wow. So it was like 26 years ago that I, you know, started embarking on melting glass. Through the course of it, I have been fortunate enough to be on TV, showing people how to make beads. Also parlayed that into some macrame stuff. Macramania, I used to hang out there. So macrame is the art of knotting. And I have my book that I was able to write through all these different things that that the glasswork opened doors for, because there's not a lot of it. But there, believe it or not, are a lot of different techniques that can be careers. And I need employees. I need people to help me. So I'm gonna have to have you guys learn. But there's kiln forming, so that's fusing, slumping, casting. The applications for that are, you know, tile making, so architectural detail, lighting, other things. I also, yes, make beads. So I have some beads over there that I make jewelry and stuff like things that make noise. And blowing glass. And one of my favorite things is to be able to take all of those techniques and put them together into one piece, which I have blown glasses that are like that. One of my other side gigs that I picked up along the way is I run an arts organization in Northeast Los Angeles, and that led me to start publishing an art newspaper. So you can grab a copy. It's called LA Art News, and there's always stacks downstairs because this is one of my best drop-off places. So yeah, glass is awesome.
Hey guys, I'm Aram Nigahosian, and I work at Adams Forge. I'm the artist in residence there. I kind of, as a kid, I was really into working with my hands, working with wood, and I always had a fascination for knives. So I would start making those as a kid in my garage. And what I liked about that kind of craft was that I got to work with steel and wood, or bone, or antler, and leather. So there were all these different things that went into that craft. But at that time, I only had the ability to cut out knives out of blanks. So my goal was eventually someday to learn how to hammer out steel. And I went to college to UC Santa Barbara. I studied film studies, got a degree in film studies, came back to, you know, this area, Los Angeles, and I worked in the film industry for about 10 years as a film editor. I really enjoyed that time, but it was so dependent on other people. As far as, you know, someone had to write the movie, someone had to, you know, a studio had to green light, all these things had to happen. I had to have my agent working. There was so many things that had to go on before I could get to work, so to speak. And I had started going to school where Heather's the president of Adams Forge. I'd started going to school there just as a hobby, learning blacksmithing. And I just completely fell in love with it and just started taking every class that was offered and spending as much time as I could there, and decided that was really what was making me happy in life, is that, you know, I could go in with an idea in the morning and at the end of the day that was materialized. So that's what really got me into it. And, you know, since then, since learning the craft, I think part of that is passing it on and teaching it. Once you reach a certain level, it seems like that's the natural progression. And I think you also learn a lot from teaching. So that's kind of what got me to where I am today.
Now we don't live that long.
Question was, how did you get to where you are today, and specifically any things that high school students or college students could do to get more to do your career as well?
Okay. Hi, I'm Jane. I'm from the Offerman Wood Shop, the three of us are.
Sorry we're late.
We apologize. The traffic was crazy. I am the resident light maker. I make lights and lamps. I also manage the shop, so I kind of do some part-time work, just helping run things. And then I also sell lamps through the wood shop and on my own. Let's see. I guess growing up, I was always into any kind of different material, so I would really encourage you to just try different materials and play with them. It just, you know, don't pigeonhole yourself. When I went to college, I went to a liberal arts college and I majored in art and multi-ethnic studies. So again, like broad base, and I could just try a lot of different things. I did sculpture and like experimental printmaking in college. And oddly enough, those kind of came together for my like my final show in college were like the kind of these weirdo giant lights. I ended up putting light bulbs in them because I was like, well, it's already kind of a light, so let's put a light in there. And then I kept doing art stuff, and then I fell into doing set design, because for paid work, like once you get out of college, you're like, who's gonna pay me to do something creative? And that was a really fun job. I did that for a long time. I did a lot of theater and opera and film. And then kind of a like similar story that we just heard is that I kind of realized that you know, this is a fun job, but then the whole, there's all this other stuff around it. So I just started making things again, and that's when I started my lighting business. And I remembered all the stuff I made in college, and you know, these days you can just start making something, and you can make a simple website, and you know, maybe somebody wants to buy it. You know, like that's a really simple exchange. And I also had community, so you know, look out for your communities of people who do things that you find interesting, you know? And I had a lot of help from the wood shop before I got so involved with it. I was next door just renting from our neighbor because I was just a metal worker. And so, and I was starting to make my lights, and then as I got sucked into the wood shop more and more, they taught me how to do woodworking stuff, you know, just because I like knew a little bit about everything. So don't be afraid of, you know, different materials and learning from people or asking them how to make stuff, and surround yourself with creative people that you admire. So yeah, I think that's how I got to be sitting here in front of you.
My name's Sarah. I'm the project manager at Offerman Woodshop. I make furniture. The path that got me there was I went to school for interior design after high school, and after I got out of school, I was working and I was on construction sites, and I realized I was having a hard time conveying to contractors and builders what I needed because I didn't know how it was, how could I explain that I wanted something built if I didn't know how it was going to be built, and I felt like I didn't have the confidence and people didn't have the respect for me for that reason, so I just started picking up tools and building. And then I realized that I liked that almost more than the design part of it. And it was really exciting and empowering to just start making things. And I made a lot of really bad things, and I made things that were better. And then I got into rough framing and was doing more carpentry stuff. And then it just kind of refined more and more down to furniture because I really like the level of precision and the creativity that comes with making furniture and the functionality of it as well. And so I did that on kind of just teaching myself. I had the communal wood shop that I shared with people for 5 years. And then actually just last year, I decided to go to a really wonderful school called the Krenov School of Fine Woodworking, and it's up in Northern California. And it's this amazing 9-month furniture making program. And it's actually really wonderful because it's technically through the community college. So it's a really, really, really good education for community college prices. And they do the Boggs fee waiver and the Pell grants and all of those things. So anyone should look into that if they're interested in making furniture. It's a really wonderful school, and I learned a ton. And I worked at Offerman before that part-time, and then when I came back, the person who was in my position left. So I'm now the project manager. So I've been making furniture for 6 years or so doing woodworking, and I really love it. Ways to get into it: Cerritos College here in LA has a really good furniture making program. They have different tracks. They have cabinetry and furniture, and you know, it's through the community college, so it's really affordable. There's different places like Allied Woodshop down here, downtown, that teaches classes. Maddie and I actually teach classes there sometimes, kind of intro to woodworking classes. Finding mentors is a really great way to get into craft. Sometimes that just takes luck. I actually met my first mentor in a library. I was just like, I'm going to be a woodworker. And so I went to the library and I had all these books spread out in front of me. And I was like, I'm going to learn woodworking by reading all these books. And actually this guy just came up to me and was like, hey, are you interested in woodworking? And I ended up working in his shop for 5 months and learning kind of the foundations of the skills. So yeah, outreach, luck. I mean, I reached out to Offerman when I moved to LA and just introduced myself, and they found a position for me. So just putting yourself out there, asking people for apprenticeships, informal, formal, community college. Yeah, I think those are all good ways to get into furniture making. And it's really rewarding. I really love doing it.
Hi, my name is Matt, and I'm the floor technician at the Offerman Wood Shop, and I've been there 7 years, maybe a little over 7 years now, and it's the longest place I've ever worked at. I have a sort of a strange way of coming into woodworking. I never wanted to be a maker, craftsperson, or in the trades, ever. And I guess two things happened. So one, my dad is an electrician, and so growing up with him, I always worked every summer with him, and I hated it. And now I regret so much not for retaining any of that information. When I was your age, I have a dream of being an actor, and two things happened where, one, I can't get any acting jobs, and two, I'm a terrible waiter, the worst. And so I lived in New York for many years, and I luckily got a job at a theater, learning to be a carpenter there, scenery carpentry. And something amazing happened where I realized that people in the trades, in construction, and set construction included, they tend to be nicer human beings. And that really had an impact on me. And also doing something physical with people every day, you form like an amazing bond more than, I've held a lot of jobs. One time I had 9 jobs in 1 year, but that was all before this. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. This bond. And so when I moved to Los Angeles, I could not work in a restaurant, even though I did for a little bit, and I got yelled at a lot. And I heard about this Offerman Wood Shop, and I was like, maybe they're like-minded. And so it took a lot of tracking down, and I showed up one day with donuts, and I was like, hey, I would love to work here. And they were nice about it, but they're like, we're not really a business and we're not hiring. And so I said, okay, well, can I just hang out on occasion? And they're like, they weren't too thrilled about it. But then I started just showing up and watching. And I literally cleaned the bathroom and swept the floors for a couple of months. And then Lee, who was the former manager, asked, she's like, hey, I've got this project. Do you want to sand? And I was like, yes. And I think I was making a $9 an hour. And going into debt, but I was like loving it. And the family there was amazing. And now 7 years later, I have a totally different role there, and I'm still learning every day, but the craft aspect is just awesome, and the people are the best. So regardless what you think now, don't be afraid to like let a journey happen. And also, if you want to get into any kind of craft or trade or anything, just show up and ask to be a part of it and see if anyone can talk to you and guide you.
Thank you, everyone. That was excellent. Does the audience have any questions they want to ask now, or shall I continue? Anyone? Teen volunteers? Okay, you're warming up. I understand. Can you talk, because these are such unique careers and you've talked a little about it, can you describe a typical workday? And also, some of you seem freelance, some of you are in-house full-time, but how you kind of navigate your workday?
We talked about this a little bit in the car on the way. I think there's no such thing as a typical workday. The only thing the workdays have in common is I might have an idea at the beginning of the day of what is going to happen, and it never does. That's pretty typical for me. I walk my dog 3 or 4 miles every morning. And then I have breakfast. And then I look at email. And then from that point on, it's sort of up in the air. What I have in my head to do is go out to my shop and work on whatever project I have going. But that can vary widely. I work almost entirely on commission, but I'm a one butt sweatshop, so it's just me out in the shop. And I don't know, is that slide still up? Oh no, it's not. There's a picture in a slideshow. My studio is in a teepee in my backyard. So I'll go out to the teepee and work on whatever project I have going. And it ranges in material, it's always metal. I can be like ADD girl, so when I quit my last theater job to do this full time, I made a promise to myself that I would only work in metal because I was tired of being a jack of all trades and master of none. So I wanted to make myself focus on at least one section of materials, and that's metal. But it might be copper or bronze or aluminum, but usually steel. And it might be something really small, from a jewelry size piece, although I don't do much jewelry, but to, you know, a driveway size gate. But some days also I do all the design work, with rare exceptions. I do all the design work myself. So it might be, instead of going out to my studio, that I sit at my drawing table and work on design for that day.
Thank you. The first part of my day has a lovely little routine. It involves coffee and checking some emails and stuff. But once I get to my studio, if that is my first stop, unless it's written on my dry erase board, I don't know exactly what may happen. Now, like today is on my dry erase board. So it says November 3, library. I know that at some point I was going to come here. The other things that I do is I teach classes out of my studio. I teach classes at Otis. I fabricate for others sometimes. We're currently working on fixing some glass that was broken on a gate that she made for Occidental College. Over in my little sample of goodies I've got going on, I have examples of some jewelry items that I'm doing for other designers. One is a very high-end designer, and I wouldn't want her life for anything, even though it involves going to Paris and stuff like that. the workload she takes on by designing, and all I have to do is make some glass items for her. You know, it's like she's got the heavy lifting. But another project that I'm currently working on is for an electric car company, which is kind of interesting, called Karma. And I'm making the jewels for lapel pins and cufflinks that will be in their catalog of things that are Karma-like. And then I do shows. So next weekend, I will be in Pasadena selling my wares, as well as teaching how to make bracelets at Otis College of Design for their 100th anniversary. I have to be in two places at one time, which I have to say, I do that to myself all the time. I need an assistant to tell me, no, you can't do that. But fortunately, I've got somebody covering for me at the show, so I can be at Otis. I'm a really, really, really busy person, and I'm working towards a day off, and I don't know when that's going to happen. And when someone does, you know, say, you need to take a day off, and I say, well, you know, on my day off, really, all I want to do is blow glass. So, and then I mentioned the newspaper. Every once in a while, I'm on newspaper duty. So that happens actually a little bit today and tomorrow. My deadline is Monday. So I can have printed copies out on the street by late Monday or Tuesday. And it involves going to see art all over the city, which is just a really horrible thing that I have to do. And sometimes with press passes, which means that they're going to feed me a lunch too. So I get to see great art all around the city, and my managing editor writes about it, and make glass in my spare time, which is all the other time. So, hope that helps.
So, yeah, days aren't super typical for me either. I don't have like a set schedule, but generally, I get into the forge. If I have class prep to do, I'll get stock cut or stock for the class prepped. Sometimes we have visiting instructors from, you know, other parts of the country, and I always coordinate with them to see what they need. I do maintenance on all our equipment, and I, you know, make sure after a weekend of heavy use that all our tools are safe and properly ground and all that. When I don't have the school business to tend with, then I usually go in with an idea of what I want to do. And a lot of times, one of my favorite things to make is hammers. So I'm always kind of designing them in my head. And usually that's, if I have a day where I get to do exactly what I want to do, I'll spend the day and I'll heat up a couple of blanks and I'll figure out, you know, the ratio of what the weight is I'm starting with and what I want to end with, and go from there and figure out the most economical way to make it. And when I say economical, I don't mean just cost-wise. I mean doing it in the least amounts of heats. So heating up as few times as possible, so that I'm not losing certain elements in the steel, like carbon and stuff like that, that I want to keep in there so I can harden it. And then at night, I like to kind of, at the end of the day, I like to kind of draw or kind of take notes on the day of like what worked for me, what didn't work, that kind of stuff. I guess I'll pass it on to you guys.
At the shop, we do have a schedule at the shop. Before I took on this schedule, I was freelance for a really long time, and that's something to think about, whether you want a set schedule or not. When you're freelance, every day is different, but you don't have the security of definitely always having a job. You know, once a job ends, then you kind of have to find the next job, which it's just work to hustle the next thing. But I loved it forever, and then something changed, and I was like, actually, I'd rather just have something a little more set. So now I have certain hours that I have to be at the shop, and I'm in charge of managing the shop and making sure everything's running well, making sure we have an online store and we ship things out, making sure all the customers are happy, all the things are going out, making sure everybody who's working on the floor has what they need. You know, anything just to keep the shop running smoothly. And we have, you know, certain things we do every week, like we have a shop meeting Tuesdays at lunch, you know, and then we all can just like bring up whatever we want to bring up and make sure we're all communicating. So that's all kind of, that kind of has its own set schedule. But then outside of those hours, I'm in my studio or working at the shop making lights and making sure my parts are either getting made or my orders are going out. So I kind of wear two different hats in those terms. So it's kind of like a loosely scheduled week. And I'd say our shop is, though we have a schedule, we're pretty flexible compared to other workplaces. So that's maybe another thing to think about as you get involved with different people. Some places are like, you're here at 9, you get a 10-minute break, that's it, you're out at 5. And, you know, we say, okay, yeah, you're here 9 to 5, but, you know, if something comes up, we're always open to that. If somebody needs to leave for a couple hours for an appointment, whatever happens. So you can have that kind of community in a smaller place if you work in a smaller place. And we have that, and, you know, because it's, we can kind of bring it down to like the human level and be like, okay, I understand you can't come in this day, but you can come in that day, let's swap it out.
The question was, what is your daily practice like? Okay, just making sure. Woodworking's really fun and exciting for a lot of reasons, but the fact that every day you're doing something different, and then at the end of the day you have tangible proof of what you were doing all day, and that is always an immediate reward. There's like, you put in work, you see it, it changes, it evolves, it gets, you know, it starts as a bunch of rough boards, and then it's a bunch of flat boards, and then it's two-dimensional. It's just pieces of a thing, and then you get the joinery going, and then all of a sudden, there's this magical moment when you put it together, and it's a thing now, and it exists. And I'm really hooked on that aspect of woodworking. And yeah, I mean, every day, depending on what part of the project, there's a lot of those parts of the project are the most exciting. There's a lot of woodworking and any other trade that, you know, you have to do the less exciting stuff as well. I do the commission furniture at the shop, so I deal with the clients. So I respond to emails and inquiries. I make bids. You have to estimate how many hours things are going to take, and that's hard to do. I recommend estimating how many hours you think something will take and then doubling it, because that's probably how long it'll take, maybe 3 times. Because you just, yeah, there's so many factors that slow you up. We're humans, we make mistakes. You do a lot of fixing your mistakes. Yeah, so that's pretty much my day. I mean, I'm really lucky. I get to make furniture all day, every day. And that's hard to find in the trades a lot of times. You're either hustling for yourself and working really hard at that, or you're working for someone else and maybe doing more menial work. So getting to actually build furniture, do whatever craft you want to do full time is really exciting. And I feel really lucky that I get to do that.
Yeah, this is all the same. We've all seen the romanticized, like, awesome woodworking videos, and where someone's in like a dramatically lit shop and the dust is just, you know, flying in the wind, and you got a spoke shave. Like, we have those moments, but like for me personally, I actually have now I've got a lot of like grunt work that I have to do. Like once a week, I got to put this respirator on, which is like a mask on your face. And I go into our outside dust collection and I climb this really rickety ladder. And I spend an hour in there blowing out the dust collector. You know, when I wake up the next day, I have like large clumps of sawdust in my eyes. And then there's times where I'm like getting to work on something and they're like, hey, the bathroom is flooding. You know, it's like, I gotta do that stuff too. So, but yeah, so with all the glamour in any type of shop setting, you gotta do the reality of it. And, but the cool thing is like we do, we eat lunch as a family every day. That's a regular. We even have a dinner bell that someone rings at one. And that's really fun and important, and we get to communicate to each other. The other cool thing is, like Jane was saying, we do have flexibility. So even though I'm a terrible actor, I still on occasion will go on an audition. And when I go to Hollywood and sit in some room and it's filled with 10 other guys that look exactly like me. And when I get back to the shop, I know that man, I get to plane some maple today and like throw it through. That's something that they can't touch. You know, it's like, I'm going to make these 2x4 and that's it. And no casting director, anybody can say anything. And at the end of the day, I have something tangible. Yeah, but that's a typical, kind of typical time at the shop.
Thank you so much. Audience, questions? Yes, miss. So, like, what's your favorite project, best project you've ever worked on?
Yes.
Okay.
Somebody needed you.
Yeah, usually whatever I'm working on now is my favorite project. But the projects that I've done two big projects for Occidental College, and those are my favorite. And Kathy and I worked on one of them together. She did. I don't like my metalwork to be painted, but I like color. So one way for me to get color was to work with a glass artist. And so we did this gate project together that are onto the athletic fields at Occidental College.
So that project's one of my favorites, and I'm not just saying it because she's right here right now. her work is so whimsical. If you get a chance to go see this gate, it is beautiful, and it's an honor to be a part of it. And also, it's at the athletic field, so the students have been kind enough to break some of the glass things, and we're in the process of replacing them. All right, and they're paying for it. Go Oxy, woo. I've been blessed to be able to do that kind of thing. I've also, I mentioned that I like to do a lot of techniques in one piece. And I remember the day that I made a glass, and it was this roll up. So I'm talking about this painting stuff, and I made elements at the torch, and I put them with the painted stuff, and I fused it all together, and I rolled up this, and I made this glass, and all these elements were there, and I had that feeling that fed my soul. And I was like, this is the sweet spot that we're all looking for in life. That was like huge, because I could feel the satisfaction that I felt in creating something from scratch that didn't exist and doesn't exist anymore, because I did manage to break it. Not then, but just like I was drinking water out of it, because I was like, this is mine, I'm not gonna sell it. And I put it down, and my friend's like, hey, you ready to catch my thing? Yeah, sure. Glass breaks, and I'm like, no, really? All right, I'll make another one. And I did. And so that one is almost better, and it belongs to somebody now. So I kind of also had that let go of, you know, I made something so insanely satisfying, and then I let it go. And that to me is also really important, because you need to keep making. You need to keep making. And you need to let go, because if you keep everything, you're a hoarder, and that ain't right. And they make fabulous gifts. My favorite thing to tell my students is, look, if you don't like it and you think it looks like garbage, give it to your family. They'll love it.
Yeah, that's a tough question for me, because it's hard to pinpoint one thing, but I'll one of the things I have up here is an axe that I made, and the axe has a bit in it that's made out of what's commonly called Damascus steel, which is a pattern welding of steel. So you have different layers of different types of steel. So it's actually three different types of steel that have been all fused together. And it was kind of an experiment when I was making it, and it all worked, and it survived everything I put it through. So I was just super happy with that and satisfied with that. But it also kind of, it gets your mind thinking about pushing the boundaries even more, and you know, trying it with different projects. So that would probably, if I had to pin one down, it'd be that one. And also, I was making it for my father-in-law. So like when you're kind of making something with someone in mind, I think that is always makes it more satisfying too, is because you're kind of thinking about that person and what they mean to you, or what, you know, it just adds somehow to the experience of making it.
That is a hard question. That's a really good question. It's a hard one. I think in terms of lights, like my favorite light I ever made, my friend was doing a dinner at a gallery. It was like kind of an art project, but it was really just like a dinner, like with big tables, and they invited all their friends. And he asked me if I wanted to do something for it. And because it was a big space, I was like, oh, I can just make anything, because usually you're dealing with people's spaces and it's like, that's a little big for over my dining table, you know, and I just want to make fun sculptural things. So for that one, I made this really giant lamp that was like these arrows, like outlines of arrows, and it got really big and it was like hanging up from the ceiling. And it was just fun because it was like a whole bunch, it was a fun community of people just eating dinner underneath it, and it didn't feel like, like sometimes when it's just a paid job, it's just a paid job, and that just felt like, oh, we were giving something to each other. And then that piece later, like these interior designers really liked it, and they hung it in their showroom for a while. And now it's in my studio, and I'm sure it'll have another life. So I'm also kind of, I like that it's had all these different lives. Just like as a, sometimes the piece can become its own like person, like your friend.
I'm gonna pitch school again because it's awesome. In the real world, you have to, unless you're a really successful artist, you have to deal a lot with making compromises for clients and things that you make, and you have to make them happy, and you have to do it for not $1 million, and you have to, you know. So I think my favorite things I made were at school, because I was just given total creative freedom and time to make exactly what I wanted to make, and I had complete control over every single decision. The first project that I made, I like parameters, and so if there aren't any, I kind of make them up. So my first project at school was a desk that was based on my favorite book, and the book was about this young boy who was also a six-armed, six-leg, winged red monster. It was kind of magical realism, and so the desk hangs on the wall, and it has this limb system that's the six arms and the wings, and then I made a stool that has six legs to match it, and that had a lot of meaning for me, and I'm really proud of it. It was really hard to build, and it took me 4 months to build, but in school you just have that time to do it. And I actually got a hold of the author and gave it to her as a gift, so that was cool. I got to meet her. It was awesome.
What's the book?
Oh, it's called Autobiography of Red by Anne Carson. It's a great book. I recommend it.
This is a little bit of a cheesier thing, but I guess my favorite project would be a wooden kazoo that I made. Basically, it's not my favorite thing to make, and it's not the most technical thing in the world, but when I started at the shop, and I had no skills yet, and I was cleaning the bathrooms, I was talking to my dad, and he was like, why don't you make a wooden kazoo? And I was like, ah, okay. So I got a plastic one, took it apart, and figured out how to make it. It's super simple. But I wasn't, it was during a time in my life too where I wasn't making any money. So I was spending all my time at the shop volunteering, and I was tinkering with this stupid kazoo. And then I remember one night I was homesick, and I got in a fight with my roommate because I had literally, I remember this, $300 left, and I didn't have enough for that much rent. $300 might sound like a decent amount to you guys, but when you got rent, it's not. And I remember being like, he's like, well, how are you gonna pay? And I was like, oh, I don't know, I got this kazoo, and maybe I'll sell at the shop. And he's like, a kazoo? Luckily, the owner of our shop is this really wonderful man who happens to be a great actor, and he went on the Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien and was kind enough to bring the kazoo on. And I had no idea this was happening, and all of a sudden, I was getting these email alerts that there were sales from the kazoo. And by the end of the night, I had rent money, and this little thing saved my life. Well, you know, or saved my time living here in the city, so. But yeah, and then that sort of jump-started a bunch of other little things that we make in the store. But yeah, I guess that's my favorite thing.
Excellent. So we only have about 10 more minutes. So who has some questions? Because I have at least one more. Yes.
As an artist myself, I have a lot of friends who say, oh, can you draw me this? Can you make me this? How do you sort of mitigate that with actually getting paid? And how do you sort of explain to people that what you do there's a monetary value to it, and how do you decide on what that value is? If that, it may be a giant question, but.
I think we should ask whoever wants.
I'm like, say no.
I will to counter your. I actually don't have a lot of people that ask for anything for free. I try to give things sometimes, and they want to give me money, which is fortunate because people appreciate the amount of labor, especially anybody who's taken a class on how to do it. So I'm fortunate. I suppose we're getting freebies from me would be out of my newspaper, you know, some promotion. Would you promote me as an artist? No. but I do, you know, I mean, I do also give, you know, scrap, I donate and different things like that. So sometimes my friends that know that I do what I do will come to me for bits, you know, and I'll be like, here, just help yourself, because there's always a box somewhere of bits that people can have or that I can give to a kid or, you know, if I'm in that kind of a situation. Whoever wants to go next. So
one thing that, oh wait, trophies, awards. They do ask for awards for free. If somebody doesn't have, sometimes I'll have people approach me and say, I don't know if I can afford this. And sometimes I'll try to talk them into taking a class. You know, if you don't can't afford to commission me, you can learn to do this. You know, I'm connected with the school. But I also really feel like having a decent website and having your work up so that it looks professional will weed out like clients that, or prospective clients that can't actually afford your work. You know, that they, when somebody goes to my website and sees big projects and a decent presentation, I feel like they go, oh, that's serious. And it will make them stand back. And they might still ask for a quote, but they're a little more prepared, I think, if you have a decent website to get back.
I would say you can always say no, is probably the first thing I would say to that. Because you want people to understand that you've put a lot of time and energy and thought into these objects. and you should kind of know what you want for it. You know, if you've made something and you want to know, like, you want to do the math and be like, well, it cost me this much to make it and I spent this many hours and I want to pay myself this much per hour. You know, you should do all that math and like figure out what you want for it. That said, I've had a lot of different situations, especially at the shop, where we have bartered and traded. So if it is with another craftsperson, I would say, you know, well, what do you make? Like, what do you have going on? You know, like, within the shop, we've totally, it's like, oh, I really need that thing. Well, okay, I've made an extra one and you've helped me out with this other thing. And that's okay. You know, as long as you feel like you're getting compensated equally, right? And you don't want to just give things away because it's your work, you know, and you're proud of that work. And so it's not just a freebie. But also when I was working in set design, I guess I feel like mentioning that in the beginning, you know, sometimes you get an internship or sometimes you do a job for free. And you do that job for free if it's going to help you. If it's going to help you learn something, if it's going to help you build a relationship with somebody. And I got great things out of doing those jobs. And I had other people work for me for free who went on to have great careers in set design. So think about, you know, you don't always just get money out of a thing, right? Maybe you get a connection or an experience, but make sure that you're cool with that before you start giving your time away. Anybody?
Thank you. Any questions in the audience, or did anyone else want to answer?
I was just going to say, Jane said what I was going to say. Yes. I mean, a lot of the skills that I gained by doing things for free in the beginning. But at some point you have to say that what you do is worth something. And it's really hard to do. And your family will always ask you to build things if you know how to build.
How comfortable does everyone in your careers need to be with technology and or social media? And what platforms do you use? If any.
Tell the truth. Remember, tell the truth.
Okay.
I'm a dork.
I did mention that I did graphic design, and I'm very grateful for that because it gave me a number of skills that have allowed me to transition into the internet, the interwebs, somewhat gracefully. I did my first website probably when you could, with PageMill, on Earthlink or AOL or, you know, something way back when. I think it's about 20 years ago that I made my first website. And my thing is that I don't like being held hostage by some web designer that got a better gig or left town. And I mean, really, there is a control freak part of me that has to kind of, you know, keep things in check and do a lot of stuff myself. And that said, I've been able to maintain my website, and they're not the best websites, but I've grown with the technology. I use Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. I know, you know, I'm of that other generation, so there's probably some stuff that the kids are using that I don't, and they may go, oh, Facebook, you know. My websites are hosted by Squarespace, so, you know, they provide a wonderful platform for you to easily interact and interface. I also sell through Etsy, which has been around. It was like after eBay for handmade goods. They started in 2005. I've been with them since 2006. And basically, fortunately for me, I have sold enough items that I can relist them and do a made-to-order kind of thing. And I do sell mostly handmade glass beads, which has a smaller base of people. If you're selling something that there's tons of people selling, then, you know, you've got a lot of competition. And something like Etsy has to be worked. It has to be treated like a job. So you have to be persistent and you have to be regular. I do blog for a website called craftgossip.com. And I've been doing that for about 9 years. And so it has also helped. I've been a little bit lax in the last couple of years, but that's because I've got a store and a newspaper. So I am trying to pick it up again. And I am also, I've got a YouTube channel where I'm starting to do my own videos, because I have done television, craft television in the past. And one last note on that, I will be doing online classes for Otis. So that is also why that I'm like really ramping up, so I can get that public speaking and thing happening and be organized, because that's one of my difficult things is being organized. So, but yeah.
For me, for my day-to-day sort of work, there's no real new technology, I'd say. You know, it's fire. Yeah, it's fire and it's hammers and it's anvils. The one thing to I'd love to get into like that selling made-to-order pieces. So that's one thing that I'm kind of looking into now, is learning how to set up a website and do that kind of thing. And kind of relating this back to that other question, that was the kind of thing, like if someone has those skills of setting up a website, like I would be willing to, you know, trade, you know, make certain things for them to kind of trade services, like we were talking about. All right.
I think in woodworking, there is kind of a technological field with like CNC machines, which are computer operated cutting machines, and you could do interesting things with them. And there are, I think, stable careers in those sort of jobs, but it's more of, to me, it's more technician work than craft work. Social media, I think, is good to do. It's hard to sell yourself, and I think people do it really successfully over Instagram, and yeah, having a website is good. But I also think that a lot of commission work comes from word of mouth and repeat clients in woodworking. So I think it's good to have a presence in social media. I mean, the best thing about social media for me with woodworking is talking to other woodworkers. It's not really putting myself out there to try and find work. It's to talk to other woodworkers and craftspeople and share the things that we're doing and share skills and tell each other good job.
I don't love being on the computer, so I kind of like drag my feet when learning new technology. But I've always just approached it as I need to learn what I need to know. Like, so it's, you know, it's all based on what I want to do. And so then if I need to learn a program to do that, then I learn it, you know. So like we use SketchUp at the shop, and our shop is pretty anti-technology. We kind of just want to be working with our hands. But we all know some SketchUp now, because that's a good way to make a 3D drawing of the thing that person wants, and they need to see that drawing first. I trade with a friend to make my website so that I can sell things online. Social media is free advertising. Like, that's awesome. I say just, you know, unless you love a certain program and love being on the computer and you just want to get really good at that, then just learn what you need to know to make happen what you want to happen.
Well, thank you all so much. You've been absolutely wonderful. We are out of time, but audience members, please take a look, see at all the beautiful art that's on the table, and I'm going to play the video you brought, and I also have their websites all up, so you can click back and forth if you'd like to look at their websites. So if we could give a great hand of applause.